There are aspects of our faith that are simply profound. The nature of God, the incarnation of Jesus Christ, fully human and fully God, the movement, the indwelling, the empowering of the Holy Spirit. Want to derail a Bible study? Ask the leader to explain to you the doctrine of predestination or the relationship of the Trinity. There are some aspects of our faith that are simply profound. And then there are still others that are profoundly simple, such as the two one anothering passages we look at this morning. Be kind to one another and do not grumble against one another. Both short and sweet enough that you could put them on a pencil or on a bumper sticker or on a yard sign. You could post it on a post-it note and put it on your bathroom mirror. Profoundly simple admonitions, simple enough even to teach our youngest children, then why so difficult for us to put into practice? And why important enough that they be included in our scriptures? Each of the one anothering passages we've been looking at in recent weeks could stand alone, but we've also seen that they create something of a daisy chain. They all could be interrelated with one another. They remind us that while each of us has an individual experience or expression of faith, a different way or a unique way of approaching life or at looking at the world. At the same time, though, they remind us that we are also part of a community, part of a family, a company of believers called the church. That is, we are together. If Christianity was simply an exercise of individual faith, just me and Jesus, then we wouldn't be concerned about one anothering at all. But only about ourselves, about me, myself, and I. But it's not. By God's good design, we are all in this together. Recall that saying of E. Stanley Jones, "You belong to Christ, I belong to Christ. We belong together." So be kind to one another and do not grumble against one another are reminders to us that it is not simply me or we ourselves that we are called to care for or be concerned about, but one another as well. Those two profoundly simple admonitions force us out of our self-centered, self-absorbed way of doing life, our self-absorbed way of looking at the world, and ask us to be concerned, or at least inquisitive, about how others are experiencing it. And that not just those who look and act and think and believe like we do, but those who have an experience of life that is different than our own. And that is the part that is not always easy for us to do. Thoreau names our human condition well when he writes, "I should not talk so much about myself if there was anyone else whom I knew so well. Unfortunately, I am confined to this theme by the narrowness of my own experience." And therein is the rub in these commandments, to be kind to one another, not to grumble against one another. Because I know how I feel, I know what I think, I know how I interpret life. I know what I'm going through. But these force me to ask, how are you feeling? And what are you going through? They force me to consider that it's not all about me, at least not if I'm going to try to live my life in any way with a Christian worldview or with the heart or the mind or the eyes or the ears of Christ. Stephen Covey, in his very popular book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, describes an experience he had on a subway one Sunday morning in New York City. He writes, "People were sitting quietly, some reading newspapers, some lost in thought, some resting with their eyes closed. It was a calm, peaceful scene. Then suddenly a man and his children entered the subway car. The children were so loud and rambunctious that instantly the whole climate changed. The man sat down next to me and closed his eyes, apparently oblivious to the situation. The children were yelling back and forth, throwing things, even grabbing people's papers. It was very disturbing. And yet the man sitting next to me did nothing. It was difficult not to feel irritated. I couldn't believe that he could be so insensitive so as to let his children run wild like that and do nothing about it, taking no responsibility at all. It was easy to see that everyone else on the subway felt irritated too, so finally, with what I felt was unusual patience and restraint, I turned to him and said, "Sir, your children are really disturbing a lot of people. I wonder if you wouldn't control them a little bit." Let me pause in the telling of the story there. We get his frustration, don't we? We get the irritation they felt. That peaceful morning ride was being interrupted by a bunch of unruly kids and an irresponsible parent. It's easy to see how if we had been on that train, we too might have started commenting or staring or wagging our heads or our tongues, complaining and grumbling, even criticizing them for what they're doing to us, how they are inconveniencing us, how they are irritating and annoying us. We get that because that's how we are experiencing the situation, how it's affecting us. But in that moment, whether it's on a subway car or in the grocery line where somebody's trying to cut in or fumbling and can't find their coupons, or at a stoplight and cars are honking their horns for who knows what reason, do we ever stop to wonder why they're doing what they're doing? What they may be going through that would cause them to act the way they are? Likely not, unless we intentionally choose to ask a different set of questions in that circumstance. I have a friend who has developed an interest and really an expertise in the area of ACEs, A-C-E-S, Adverse Childhood Experiences Syndrome. Think divorce or death of a parent, drug or alcohol abuse, violence in the home. She has helped me in those situations where I feel irritated or inconvenienced or the need to grumble and complain about another's behavior, to no longer ask, "What's wrong with you?" but rather to ask, "What has happened to you? What are you going through?" Do you hear how reframing that question changes the way we look at that irritating, grumble-producing circumstance we find ourselves in and the person causing it? These past couple of months, well, I'd say pretty much all of 2020, have been the perfect proving ground for this kind of change of perspective to be put into practice. I don't know about you, but I have found folks to be a little more snarky, a little more curt, a little more short or irritable with one another than normal. Perhaps I myself as well. In those moments when we feel justified in our complaints and irritation, imagine how things might look or play out differently if instead of asking, "What's wrong with you?" we were to ask instead, "What has happened to you? What are you going through?" In that moment, might we hear about their genuine struggle with disease or distress or discouragement or fatigue? Concerns about a job situation, about their health, or about someone close to them, their health, about their angst over a social or racial issue, about their anxiety or their elation about the outcomes of an election. Oh, we know how we are thinking and feeling about all of those things, so we feel ourselves justified when we complain or grumble or criticize to be a little ruder, a little less kind, a little more blunt, because we feel like it and we think we deserve to speak or act or think that way. But perhaps if we had some inkling of what they were going through and how they were feeling, Our eyes would be opened, our hearts softened, and our response to them a little more kind and gentle. There is truth to the saying, be gentle with everyone you meet, for everyone you meet has a cross to bear. Let me return to the Covey story. The children are running wild. They're disrupting and irritating everyone on the subway car while the father sits quietly with his eyes closed. Finally, Covey turns to the man and says, "Sir, your children are really disturbing a lot of people. I wonder if you wouldn't control them a little more." And then he continues. The man lifted his gaze as if to come to consciousness of the situation for the first time and said softly, "Oh, you're right. I guess I should do something about it. We just came from the hospital where their mother died an hour ago. I don't know what to think, and I guess they don't know how to handle it either." And Covey writes, "Suddenly I saw things differently. And because I saw differently, I behaved differently. Everything changed in an instant." So how do we get that change of perspective? It may be by starting to put into practice these profoundly simple admonitions. Be kind to one another, and do not grumble against one another. Just imagine how your attitude, your demeanor, your perspective on life, on the way you see and relate to others would change. Perhaps how much easier you would be to live with if I put these two profoundly simple truths into practice. The world is full of people who claim the right to be extremely vocal in criticism and totally exempt from action, writes William Barclay. Life is not so short, but there is always room for courtesy, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Speak kind words and you will hear kind echoes. Kindness is the only language the blind can see and the deaf can hear. Drop a word of cheer and kindness, just a flash and it is gone, but there's a half a hundred ripples circling on and on and on. The rabbis laid it down that there were six great works which brought a person credit in this world and profit in the world to come: study, visiting the sick, hospitality, devotion in prayer, education of the children in the law, and thinking the best of other people. Kindness in judgment of others is nothing less than a sacred duty. Just try it this week. Take notice of the difference which can be made, even among the most curmudgeonly among us, by a smile, by a wave, a please, a thank you, a touch, a hug, a pat, a note, a card, a pleasant tone of voice, have a nice day, can I help you with that? I will be praying for you. Be kind to one another and do not grumble against one another. Profoundly simple admonitions. Then why so hard to put into practice? Because they address the fundamental human condition, our original sin, if you will. Our inability not to think of ourselves as being the center of our own little universes, much less the focal point of our utmost concern and attention. Our self-centeredness, our self-absorption, our inability to see from another person's perspective or point of view, our inability or unwillingness to stop and ask not what's wrong with you, but what are you going through, is the fundamental flaw of the human condition. But the good news is this, and it is good news indeed. It is addressable and it is fixable. It can be and it has been. Friends, these aren't merely simple, practical, little social niceties that we are taught in childhood. They are, in fact, spiritual truths which God has taught us and shown us in Jesus Christ. You see, this is how God has responded to us. And so, as imitators of God, as beloved children, This is how we are to respond to one another. Be kind to one another. Do not grumble against one another. Profoundly simple. Simply profound.